And welcome back. Tuberculosis, it's still a major health issue in many parts of the world. Efforts are ongoing to find a vaccine to prevent it. Important work in this regard is taking place right here in St. Louis. We'll be talking about the problem, the research, and its progress today. Joining me in studio is Dr. Daniel Hoft, Director of the Division of Infectious Diseases and Immunology at St. Louis University. Doctor, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Don. It's nice to be here.
When I think of the various diseases that are out there and threatening, tuberculosis anymore is pretty far down on the list as far as I'm concerned in St. Louis.
Well, in St. Louis, we still have dozens of cases each year. As a worldwide problem, actually a third of the world is infected with tuberculosis. So it's a huge problem worldwide.
I thought we'd pretty much gotten rid of it in this country.
We have done a very good job of identifying cases and then looking for spread of the infection to additional patients. But we have a lot of immigrants from areas with very high rates of tuberculosis coming into the United States, and also in crowded conditions in the inner city areas, nursing homes, in prisons. We have a lot of problems with tuberculosis still in the United States.
What is the problem in dealing with it? This is a disease, as I understand it, goes back thousands of years in recorded history.
It's a very smart bug. It's learned to evolve with us so that it persists for the lifetime in individuals that get exposed and then infected. So it hides in the body. Of the third of the world that's infected with tuberculosis, over their lifetimes, about 10% will develop disease. So most of the time, it really doesn't cause disease in the people that are infected. But 1 in 10 people will develop disease, and that's a risk to them of lots of bad complications, including death, as well as that's when it's spread to other people. So it hides in a very large population, but breaks out in 1 in 10 of those people and spreads and causes more disease.
I've always been under the impression that it's a particular problem with the lungs. Is that correct?
That's correct. Most of the disease is in the lungs, but it can also cause disease in pretty much any place in the body, or it can cause a very disseminated infection throughout the body.
Didn't this part of the country used to be a place where people would go to be treated for it in the sense fresh air and wide-open environment, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there were many places in the United States where there were so-called sanitariums, right, where patients would be isolated so that they wouldn't further spread the infection and disease to other people. And also, those areas were expert at trying to do everything they could to maintain nutrition. Once drugs were developed, deliver the drugs, make sure they were being taken. And all of that was much facilitated by having focused areas with experts that could do those things.
How is it treated now?
It's treated with drugs. It depends on if you're talking about infection without disease, which 90% of the people are like that have TB infection. Those individuals, once we identify them, we can treat them with a single drug. It has to be taken for 6 to 9 months for it to really have high efficacy, though, to get rid of the infection. For people that have the lung disease, then that's much more difficult. We need to treat with multiple drugs. Usually we start with 4 for the first 2 months of treatment, and then every patient needs at least another 4 months of at least 2 drugs after that.
Is it often fatal?
It certainly can be if without treatment. About half of the individuals that develop disease would die within a 5-year period. And now the other problem we're having, besides it still being very widely spread around the world and being brought into the United States with immigrants and being spread in close situations where people are crowded.
It's highly communicable.
Yes. Yeah. The other issue is drug resistance. So the organism has developed the ability to escape the drugs that we have. And there's 2 kind of main types of drug-resistant TB, one that's resistant to the 2 drugs, isoniazid and rifampin, which we've been using since the 50s, and that combination was a breakthrough in terms of allowing very high cure rates. There's strains of those so-called MDR TB strains that are resistant to the isoniazid and rifampin. About 10% of all cases around the world are MDR TB. Now there's also what we're calling XDR TB, which is extensively or extremely drug resistant TB that's resistant to those drugs, isoniazid and rifampin, but also other drugs that have been useful for treating the MDR TB. So in some places in the world, we actually have strains that are not able to be treated, particularly in areas of lower socioeconomic status. There's not as good a public health infrastructure. There's not as much money, governmental money, for paying for the drugs. They're virtually untreatable in some places in the world.
Well, of course, the work you're doing now is to try to prevent anyone having to get to that point, and that is to prevent the disease altogether. Tell us about the work and the research that's going on right here.
Well, I think it's very exciting. Of course, I'm not biased, but there's a lot of work that's been going on for about the last 15, 20 years in TB vaccine development. We have a lot of new candidates. In animal models, at least, we've seen hundreds, literally, of new vaccines that can induce some protective immunity, say in mice or in guinea pigs. The real challenge now is to translate those successes in animal models into humans so that we can develop, vaccines that can protect people. The main problems that we have in making that translation are really twofold. First, we don't have a simple blood test that can tell us whether or not a vaccine worked. So we can't just vaccinate somebody with a new vaccine and see if it is inducing something that we know would be protective. We don't know enough about the immune responses that are important for preventing infection with TB and preventing the, even if you get infected, the progression of the infection to disease. So without a simple blood test, it's hard to know whether or not the vaccines work. What you need to do in people is do phase 3 efficacy trials eventually, which are the real test whether or not a vaccine works. And that means you vaccinate a large group of people, compare them to people that didn't get vaccinated or got vaccinated with the standard BCG vaccine that is available around the world, and see if the new vaccine works better. The problem with that is that you need to do that in a lot of people. And since the 10% of people that once they get infected develop disease, that disease happens over their entire lifespan, you've got to follow a large number of people for a long time, which means a lot of money. So we're talking in the range, it's been estimated that for one vaccine to be moved forward all the way to having a better vaccine for use in people could cost $100 million. So if we have a couple hundred candidates that are looking good in animals, we just can't do that with every one of them. We can't do a $100 million development strategy for each one. So we got to pick which ones are the most promising. And that's where we come in. What we're talking about today and the studies that we've just started at St. Louis University are trying to develop a way of finding which of those many vaccines that look good in animals could be the best ones to use in people.
Have any of these vaccines been used on people? I mean, has it all been animals up to this point?
There are about 7 or 8, depending on, I'm not sure when different trials have been started in different parts of the world, but there are about 7 or 8 new vaccines that have been tested in people, at least in phase 1. There are a couple candidates that are in phase 2, meaning just a little larger groups of people looking at both safety and immunogenicity and starting to look at some protection type results. We haven't had any phase 3 studies, which are the biggest trials that look at enough individuals getting the vaccine compared to a group that didn't get the new vaccine to see if the new vaccine works better yet.
It would seem to me, given the fact that the incidence of the disease is relatively limited in this country, that you really have to take this research to places where it's quite much in evidence.
A lot of it needs to be done in places where there's lots more tuberculosis. For example, the Gates Foundation, which has done a lot of great things for development of new vaccines, delivery of vaccines, helping with education around the world, lots of things. One of the things specifically for tuberculosis is they've spent about $500 million over the last 15 years setting up an infrastructure for being able to go all the way from phase one through phase three studies. They have funded us here at St. Louis University to do four phase one trials, the first tests in people of new TB vaccines, designed mostly to look at safety. And we also look at what immune responses are being induced. But most of the money has not come to St. Louis University. It's gone to a couple places. One of the largest funding amounts have gone to South Africa, where in an area close to Cape Town, there's a vaccine center that they've developed similar to our vaccine center at St. Louis University, but that's in an area where there's a lot more tuberculosis. To give you numbers, the current numbers of people that develop tuberculosis in the U.S. is in the range of 5 or 6 per 100,000 people per year. In South Africa, where the Gates Foundation has set up this new vaccine testing center, it's more like 1,000 cases of disease per 100,000 people per year. So basically 1% of the population develops TB disease every year.
So would your research group be involved in South Africa then? I mean, would...
In two ways. So the first way is by doing first in human studies with new vaccines, the initial phase one studies is how we've been involved in this human vaccine development work. The other way is to be involved in design of the trials and what immune responses should we be measuring, what samples should we be taking from people, and we can even do some of the studies of the immune responses. Once we have a vaccine that works better than the standard vaccine, then we can learn from that what was responsible for making the better response. That can help us in what we think of as an iterative way, just, you know, in a cyclical fashion, developing one vaccine that works a little better and then learning how and then making one that does it even better than that by focusing on what we learned from the first one.
You know, the things that you've said really describe to me, the layman, mm-hmm. almost a series of insurmountable obstacles. Mm-hmm. Why mm-hmm. are you so excited about this?
Well, because there's a lot of new TB vaccines. We've learned a lot more about the immune response. There were no BCG, the vaccine that's been used since really 1921 in France, was the only TB vaccine up until that had been used in people up until I guess about 12 years ago now. And now, like I've said, there's hundreds of candidates, and we know a lot more about the immune response, and we have funding that is being put into this major challenge that can make a difference, like the Gates Foundation, the NIH, the European Consortium, and a lot of pharmaceutical companies are getting involved. And there's more collaboration between all of these groups to try to work together to make successes happen.
The collaboration aspect of this is interesting to me because I wonder how well you all communicate with each other. I'm sure there's research mm-hmm. going on all over this planet because of the severity of the problem elsewhere in the world. Mm-hmm. How do you work with others to make sure that you're not just doing the same thing and, you know, wasting time that way?
Well, communication is critical. Meetings. These have been sponsored by the World Health Organization. For example, I've been to Geneva, Switzerland, probably about 8 to 10 times over the last 10 years for meetings that specifically focus on TB vaccine development. And the WHO doesn't have a whole lot of money for research, but what they do is bring people together from different parts of the world to discuss these things. They also do a lot of important work in terms of just making sure in developing countries that basic treatments and prevention strategies are followed and successfully done. But getting us together so we can talk about it is very important and helps us prevent duplication of efforts and learn from each other's successes and failures.
Where does St. Louis University stand in the research hierarchy here? Is it a leader? Is it in the middle of the pack? Or
Well, I'd say we're a leader. I mean, we've been a vaccine center for, I guess, almost 25 years now. We're one of 8 of the centers in the United States that are funded by the National Institutes of Health to study vaccine development, not just for tuberculosis, but that's one thing that we have been focusing on for over 15 years now. And in fact, we're the only one of these 8 centers that has a 15-year track record of working on TB vaccine development. In addition, as I mentioned before, the Gates money, funding that actually went through a foundation called the ARIS Foundation that's headquartered in Rockville, Maryland, has come to us to do first-in-human studies with a number of their new TB vaccines because of our 15 years of research in TB vaccine development.
We have limited time, but we do have time for a call or two at 382-8255. We already have one. Let's bring in Mark, who's calling from South St. Louis. Mark, thanks for being with us. Go ahead. You're on the air with Dr. Hoft.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the program. I was wondering, are any of these new vaccines going to be effective against some of the the drug-resistant strains of TB that we have been seeing here?
Yeah, that's a very good question. We believe so the basic question, as I understand it, is will the vaccines work against drug-resistant strains? And we have every reason to believe that that is the case, will be the case, because so far all of the genes in the bacterium that causes tuberculosis that are involved in drug resistance have not been shown to be involved in the immune response, which is the critical target for vaccines. So we think that all the vaccines that are being developed should be able to protect against both susceptible strains of TB and resistant strains of TB.
How many different strains are there?
Well, thousands. There's TB, the Mycobacterium tuberculosis bacterium that causes tuberculosis is a relatively stable organism. But there are many, many different strains that have some differences that are spread throughout the world. We don't know how important those differences are beyond, say, differences in drug susceptibility. But that's another area of research that people are working on to try to understand more about that.
I think we have time for one more quick question. Godson, I believe, is the name in St. Louis. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. I wanted to ask him if there's any collaboration with the Gates Foundation and other institutions that are doing something about HIV infection, because TB is one of the most killing opportunistic infections for HIV patients in Africa, mostly in Africa. What they're doing about it.
That's correct. There's a co-pandemic of HIV and TB throughout Africa, and the two fuel each other and are responsible for millions of deaths every year. The work that we're doing is focused on the TB bacterium, but by preventing infection and or preventing disease with a vaccine, that can prevent the negative effects that TB has on HIV, for example. So they're related. It's a big challenge to try to develop a vaccine that would work in preventing tuberculosis, for example, in patients with far advanced HIV infection, since they don't really have any immune system that could respond to a vaccine. But our goal would be to try to lower the total amounts of tuberculosis so that there's less spread, and then the HIV-infected patient would be less likely to get infected. That would be another way it could work.
Only about a minute left. Where are we, would you guess, in this whole process of finally coming up with a successful vaccine?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we have one now that does prevent death and TB meningitis in infants in the first 5 years mm-hmm. of life. Just doesn't prevent infection, and it hasn't lowered the overall prevalence of TB infection and disease. For those better vaccines to do those things, we're hoping in the next 10 to 20 years we'll have vaccines that will do those things.
Yeah. It just clarifies the fact that there are so many different avenues you have to explore to deal with this, that it's not just one size fits all, obviously.
That's right.
Dr. Daniel Hoff, thank you so much for being with us and telling us about your research. Good luck with it. Hopefully we can reduce that time frame of 15 to 20 years.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Hoff is Director of the Division of Infectious Diseases and Immunology at St. Louis University. And again, we appreciate your being with us. And we'll ask you to join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, when he'll talk with historic interpreter Ann Williams about her holiday presentation and about the collaboration between Circus Flora and the St. Louis Symphony to present A Child's Christmas in Wales. Also, Erin Williams talks with Terry Baker Mulligan about her memoir on growing up in Harlem. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the newly renovated Central Library downtown. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Ariana Tobin, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.